In the early morning, she wades out into the paddy field. It feels far away from her village, though it didn't take her long to reach this quiet place along the water's edge. A soft mist hangs over the flat, green terrain, making the air feel thick, the day auspicious. She hikes up her trousers and steps into the muddy waters. Within a few paces, she's waist-deep in the paddy field, flat green leaves drifting up to her. The pale pink lotus blooms are large and beautiful, wobbling in the soft wake that she makes. She's not there to harvest these stunning flowers, though. It's the stems that she's after. My name is Allison B. Young, and this is Gathered, Storied Botanicals. Welcome back. It's hard to separate the lotus flower from a sense of spirituality. As author Ruth Binney put it, life sprang from the lotus. This is certainly true when looking through the lens of many Eastern religions. From China to India, to the imagery of ancient Egypt, it's striking that so many cultures took notice of the bright bloom emerging from murky waters and tied it to something meaningful, transcendental, mythic, something to worship. The ancient Egyptians believed the sun god Horus was reborn each morning from the water. Every night he'd float, enclosed within the bloom, and every morning at dawn, the flower would open and Horus would emerge. In the Hindu creation story, Vishnu, the god of preservation and guardian of the earth, produced a lotus with 1,000 golden petals on which the creator Brahma sits. From this flower, mountains rise up and rivers and seas are made to flow. Similarly, Buddha is often seen sitting cross-legged on a lotus flower in so much of the imagery of Buddhism. The rich and storied history of these flowers makes the lotus iconic. It seems as steeped in symbolism as the rose does. This also makes it feel intimidating and overwhelming to delve into such a flower. Even starting from the beginning feels dizzying with so many creation stories. Which story of beginning do I begin with? There's also irony in this. As any artist or writer will tell you, often it is the beginning, be it a painting, story, or design, that is the hardest part of the creative process. What's the first mark you make on the blank page? So, I turn back to the woman I described at the beginning of this episode. Her name is Phan Thi Thuan. After she harvests the lotus flowers, she returns to her workshop in the Ha village, about an hour away from Vietnam's capital, Hanoi. I imagine her clothes are still damp when she sets to work. Kneeling at a small work table, she carefully snaps the lotus stems, revealing the fine, fibrous strings within. Each one is thinner than a strand of hair, and her nimble fingers twist and roll the fibers. She stretches them, works them together until they're malleable, and binds them into a thread. A bowl beside her work table catches these threads as she works through each lotus stem. The work is painstaking, methodical, and practiced. I wonder if she relies on muscle memory to form these threads, if her mind can float back to the quiet pond she waded in that morning. Or else, maybe she's thinking ahead, already seeing what these threads will become. Unlike roses, I've never touched a lotus flower. I haven't really seen them in floral arrangements either. A cursory Google search offers little evidence that they're used as a cut stem or seen as part of a floral design. I've never had a bride ask for them in her wedding flowers, nor any customer request them for a daily order. Practically speaking, I'd guess that the flower doesn't last long as a cut stem, or is troublesome and expensive to ship so that florists don't find it worthwhile to supply them in their businesses. In fact, one source says just that. Lotuses are not available as a cut flower due to the fact that lotus stems are self-healing. Once a lotus flower has been cut, the hollow stem begins this healing process, sealing itself closed. This means no water can travel up the stem, hydrating the flower and sustaining it in a vase. And since the flower can't receive moisture, it begins to wilt shortly after it's been cut. The lotus defies the floral industry, defies Western commerce in this way. Not only is it from a faraway place, and it seems unattainable to the average florist like me, the lotus flower has the capacity to heal itself. This only adds to the bloom's allure. It bolsters its mythic symbolism, creates more mystery around a flower so closely tied to divinity. To glimpse other lessons the lotus might offer, let's go back to Vietnam, where it's the national flower. In the same way that ancient Egyptians adorned their temples and structures with the sacred flower, it's hard to miss the influence the lotus has on Vietnamese architecture. The One Pillar Pagoda is a historic Buddhist temple built in 1049 during the Lai Dynasty. In a small pond, the structure sits on top of a single pillar, emulating the lotus bloom that sits on top of its stem, growing out of the muddy waters. Further south, in Ho Chi Minh City, the Bitexco Financial Tower, this 68-story skyscraper, stands above the skyline. It was designed by American architect Carlos Zapata and inspired by the curve of the lotus. And right along the coast of the South China Sea, the Tram Hoang Tower looks as though it's blooming out of the sand. It was designed by architect Li Tan Tung and completed in 2008. The tower became a central landmark of Nha Trang City. From its dusty rose color to its smooth curves, the building looks like it's made of layers of petals about to open. At the base of the building, decorative, swirling sculptures greet tourists and emulate waves rolling from the flowers blossoming. Though the Tram Hoang Tower is a tourist attraction and center for travelers to see exhibits of local artwork and culture, it looks like a temple, a place for quiet reverence just steps from the sea. Somewhere along these busy city streets, merchants glide by on their bicycles. They're loaded with bundles and bunches of flowers. Their loads are so large they look like they might topple off the skinny bike frames. And they carry lotus blooms, still tight buds and framed by their lily pad-like leaves to protect them on the ride. Even if the lotus can't survive in a vase at home, Vietnam has found ways to integrate them into most aspects of life, both spiritual and the material. The flowers are a vital source of spiritual nourishment, but they also make up staple dishes in Vietnamese cuisine. All parts of the flower are edible, from the bloom, seeds, the leaves and stems, to the root and its heart. One common dish is called Khom Sen, or lotus rice. According to one source, the sweet and cool taste of lotus seeds and leaves is absorbed into each grain of rice. It's often wrapped in a lotus leaf, so when it arrives at your dinner table, it looks like a work of edible origami. Tra Sen, or lotus tea, is another significant part of the Vietnamese culture, especially in Hanoi. According to artisan Nguyen Thi Dan, the flowers must be picked before dawn and then the petals, stamen, and pistil are separated to retain their flavors. To further enhance the flavor and essence of the tea, the parts of the flour are marinated before being dried. To make 1 kilogram of tea, or a little over 2 pounds, she would need roughly 1,200 lotus flowers. It's hard to say how many bicycle riding merchants she'd need to deliver that many flowers. For Fan Ti Tuan, working the fibers of the lotus stem into threads, she would need about the same number of flowers to create about 10,000 meters, or over 32,000 feet of thread or yarn. Once enough of these cellulose threads are created from the lotus stems, they're fed into a loom. Tuan and her team of artisans then weave these sacred flowers into silk. To keep it from drying out, the silk is hung in the shade. The fabric is smooth and soft, often forming an ivory white when woven into scarves. It's lightweight and cool, and it's known for its spongy texture, its durability, and, interestingly enough, its scent. To wrap a lotus silk scarf around your neck means to carry its soft floral fragrance around your shoulders. This single flower offers so much: beauty to inspire the buildings we inhabit, the food we eat, and the garments we wear. Its very nature of growing is a symbol for resilience and rebirth by pushing through the muck and mire of a pond floor and breaking through the water's surface, clean and vibrant. And perhaps what's most striking about the lotus flower is that it offers itself as an innate tool for creating. For centuries, we have turned to the lotus, built stories, religions, and philosophies with them. Like pulling a pen or paintbrush from the inkwell, we have pulled the flowers from the pond and made our auspicious mark on the blank page. What else could we create? And what else might we honor through creating? Gathered, Storied Botanicals is a monthly podcast with room and the will to grow. It was written, recorded, and produced by me, Allison B. Young. Music composed and performed by Raven Bauer Durham. You can subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you'd like to listen. And if you liked what you heard, please consider rating the show on Apple Podcasts and leaving a review. You can head over to gathered-storiedbotanicals.com to learn more. And wherever you are, wherever you come from, I hope you'll gather around. Thanks for listening, and until next time.